Hi, Berno Goethe, German-Irish Conversations. Join me, St. Pauli fan and former Dusseldorfer, Ciarán Murray, in conversation with my guests as we explore the connecting moments of German and Irish life. We delve into the many aspects of arts, language and life across cultures. What do musicians, dancers, artists and writers pick up from both cultures? And how are they inspired and enriched by the other? Hi, Berno Goethe. German-Irish Conversations is for all listeners who like to go and think beyond borders. This podcast is supported by the Goethe Institute Dublin. Hello, Fáilte Road and willkommen. This time my guest is John Scott, Artistic Director of the Irish Modern Dance Theatre, opera singer and all-around Germanophile. You're very welcome, John. Nice to have you here.
Danke, thank you.
So firstly, I suppose, let me ask you about German culture. How is it that you're a Germanophile?
Well, I grew up, my parents had a great appreciation of the arts. My father was a lighting designer in the Abbey Theatre. My mother had been a singer, but in the days when they got married, she got married, and that was kind of the end of that. She became a full-time mother to my brother and myself. But I used to go to the Abbey Theatre. I used to be brought in to see all the plays from a very, very young age. And I think the first time I properly saw something German, I was very, very, very young. And there was a production of Brecht's Galileo in the Abbey Theatre, directed by Thomas McKenna. And I remember seeing Galileo and the telescope. I was very small. My mother didn't trust babysitters, so we were dragged into anything. And I may or may not have understood really what was going on, but that was the first time I saw something that was German. When I was 12 years old, the Abbey had an international season every summer when the repertory company took their holidays, and they brought a German dance company called Tanzform Köln. It was this extraordinary contemporary company in Germany that was founded in the 70s by three choreographers, and they specialized. They had very highly trained dancers who were both classical and contemporary. And one of their centerpieces of their work at that time was a piece by Kurt Jus called The Green Table. It was a famous expressionist anti-war ballet that was made, I think, during the 30s. That blew my mind much more than theater did. It gave me something that was very visceral, and I really became interested in dance. I was 12, but in the 70s, a 12-year-old didn't kind of inquire about studying dance. It was verboten, you know.
Your introduction to German culture was Brecht and the Green Table, something out of kind of Weimar Germany in the 1920s world. But when it comes to dance, you didn't exactly feel that there was a dance company for boys that was set up that was easy to join. So how did you then, when you took an interest in dance, how does one become a dancer in the Ireland of the 1970s?
Well, I was still in school. I did my leaving certificate. I went to UCD. I became involved in the Drama Society there. And I had a summer job with the Dublin Theatre Festival. And I worked as an assistant to Brendan Smith and Michael Colgan, an administrative assistant. And if there was a German company or German artist. So that's when I first met the Goethe Institute in my capacity in the Dublin Theatre Festival. Also, when I was in UCD in Dramsoc in the 70s, there was a type of Bauhaus arts festival, and there was a big exhibition in the Douglas Hyde Gallery.
When you say Bauhaus, you mean the architecture?
It was the architecture and also the art. The Triadic Ballet was reconstructed by what became Dublin City Ballet, and the costumes were built by people from the NCAD. And so it was very exciting to see this reconstruction of Oscar Schlemmer, and there was this quite splendid exhibition in the Douglas Hyde Gallery. This was, I think, 1979. And that was very influential on me. I was evolving as a kind of a theatre artist, and I had an interest in the avant-garde theatre. I had seen a company called the Living Theatre, and with the Living Theatre, one of the pieces in their repertoire was a version of Antigone that was rewritten by Brecht, based on a translation from the Greek by the German poet Hölderlin. And then she translated Hölderlin's translation of Sophocles' Antigone from ancient Greek to German to a poetic English. They were a company, they were associated with Allen Ginsberg and with that whole 60s generation in New York, and with John Cage, with all the radical theater dance people at the time.
Did you feel part of that radical theater, that radical
space? I didn't at that time feel part of it, but I aspired towards it. The theater in Ireland at that time was quite conservative, and it was plays, text, it was spoken. And I liked theater. I loved theater, but it was dance that really, really inspired me. But I still... My first dance class I took at the age of 19. A teacher came out to UCD and taught the Drama Society there. And I thought, this is interesting, but surely I'm too old to be a dancer. And when I graduated from college, I went to France and Italy to make contact with this company, the Living Theatre. They were touring around France. They didn't really audition. It was very much you had to be in the orbit of the company and then you would kind of fall in. But I spent time with them, and I came home and was saving up money to go back. And at that time, Dublin City Ballet had been established a couple of years earlier, and I used to work for Dublin City Ballet operating the Follow Spot. I was an extra in their production of Giselle by Sir Anton Dolan and John Gilpin, and then they were opening a school, and they were looking for men, and I was 21. I looked younger. I was skinny. And just on the eve of my 22nd birthday, I became apprentice to Dublin City Ballet. Their ballet master at the time said that with intense application and being in there the whole time, that within months I could make great differences. It would take a couple of years to kind of do it, but I had the potential, and I was delighted by this, but it was a big shock to the body, the rigors.
Tell me, that part about the physical rigors of being a dancer, mm-hmm. the amount of training and dedication involved, that was a shock to your body then. Did you stay with it? Is it something that you've always felt that you need to be in shape?
Well, I did what one had to do. The ballet master was an extraordinary dancer, and he had had a very hard training. So we had a hard... It was an apprenticeship rather than a training. You learnt by watching. You would get some teachers who would pull you aside and give you corrections. But I stayed there from 1982 till 1985. When I was 25, I thought, I am not going to become the next Rudolf Nureyev or Mikhail Baryshnikov. I have acquired a lot of skills, and it is in my body, and it's part of who I am. Because it's a whole way of learning. The choreographer Martha Graham, the American choreographer, said it takes 10 years to make a dancer, really. It does, because it goes into you in a way that the things become automatic and your body responds. It's how you learn to respond to space, your body is your instrument, it's your tool. And I got a scholarship to go and study in this academy in Ramscheid, in the Ruhrgebiet. And it was a dance course, a contemporary dance course for 2 weeks. And I took this course, and it was very near Wuppertal. So we went to see Pina Bausch in the nearby Wuppertal. It was only about 40 minutes in a bus, and we saw Tanztheater Wuppertal. 1982, it was very exciting. And I traveled a lot, because what I was getting from the ballet company, it was classical ballet, it was technique. But the inspiration, the things that were really, the things that I had seen, like the Living Theatre, those things were still not available to me in Ireland.
And when it comes to dance, what about, is it a different art form in Germany than it is here? Is it taken more seriously? Are the audiences more appreciative, or how does that work?
Well, 1982 was my first time to visit Germany, and it was, I was in Ramscheid, so Köln was the nearest big town, and I went into Köln sometimes weekends, and I was amazed by the importance that culture is given in Germany. The Transform Köln, the way they were funded and the structure they had and the spaces they had, nothing like that existed in Ireland. The theatres were too small.
Yeah, there was a whole kind of exodus of writers and directors and actors from Germany in the 1930s, but I think they went to Sunset Boulevard and set up the German colony. I don't think they really came here much, did they?
Nobody. I think Wittgenstein came and spent some time, and everybody else went to the States, I think.
Wittgenstein write, wasn't he writing in Botanic Gardens? He used to go to write his work.
Yes, I remember hearing, I think, didn't he stay in the Ashling Hotel near Houston Station as well? And he used to eat in Bewley's, I think. I don't know, what was a scrambled egg on toast. So he was before my time, but I was impressed by, there were these wonderful bookshops with dance books, theater books. It was a time when Peter Stein was running the Schaubühne in Berlin, and these extraordinary theater productions. You had Pina Bausch, there was Reinhold Hoffmann in Bremen, Susanna Linke. There were very important choreographers coming up. There was the great John Cranko, who'd founded Stuttgart Ballet. And then William Forsythe, the American choreographer, eventually took over Frankfurt Ballet and made a whole new style of dance and a reinvention of classical ballet combined with avant-garde theater. So Germany facilitated a lot of extraordinary work in dance.
Do you think that when the wall came down and after reunification, did that make much difference? Because obviously in the East, ballet was and classical music were taken very seriously, and they frowned upon Western popular culture. So do you think, was there even more after the reunification?
Well, I think everybody got into financial trouble because there was less money, but yeah, there are some important artists who came from the East, and one of the amazing things that happened near Dresden, there's this amazing building, the Festspielhaus in Hellerau, and I think it was built in 1911. I think it was designed by Walter Gropius? But it is this extraordinary futuristic building with these extraordinary facilities and this concept of space. Rather than being built as a classical theatre, you have these vast spaces, and Laban was associated with it. Nijinsky came to visit it. And during the Cold War, it was used by the Russian army as a military barracks. And it was, they left, when they left, it was in this mess. It was like filthy and run down, and this extraordinary restoration took place, and it is this incredible cultural center now.
And we've talked quite a bit about dance, but of course you're also a singer, and people may or may not be familiar with the Helden, with the Wagner Helden tenor. So tell us what a Helden tenor is.
Well, I always knew I had a singing voice, and it was after I'd started to study dance that I decided I'm going to do something about my voice, and I went to the then College of Music and knocked on Veronica Dunn's door, and she got me to sing some scales. I ended up going to the College of Music and then later studying with the great Veronica Dunn, and they discovered I had this very big operatic voice, and she sent me to a summer school in Munich in the Bavarian Staatsoper, the Bayerische Staatsoper, and they had these famous Wagnerian singers. They were all in their 70s, and they were all coaching Astrid Varney, the American Helden tenor James King. And I studied with James King there, and I became aware of Wagner. Wagner was... someone, a lot of singing teachers, when you're a young singer, they tell you to avoid Wagner because it's so big, you can push your voice into the wrong ways. And then later I studied with an Australian teacher called Janice Chapman in London. And after a couple of lessons with Janice, she took out a Wagner score. She took out Die Walküre, and she said, "You are actually a Helden tenor, and it's a darker type of voice. It almost sounds like a baritone. It's a dark color, and it's got this type of darkness and this metallic sound. It cuts through an orchestra." Wagner has these huge orchestras. So she diagnosed me as a Helden tenor, and then...
I was trying to tease out a little bit about your personality when it comes to the Helden tenor. Is it something, when you say dark, is it something that gets into your psyche? Is it kind of an emotional thing when people think of these the Götterdämmerung, the Twilight of the Gods, and these big Wagnerian things? So did you naturally have a darkness in you that could relate to that?
Rather than darkness as in menacing, that menacing can be part of it, but it's a depth, and it comes from a very deep, passionate place. Beethoven... Carl Maria von Weber and Wagner, that's the type of repertory that the Helden tenor is suited for, and it makes a lot of sound, and it's a dark sound. Some people just hate Wagner. They don't want to listen. They, for various reasons, be they political or stylistic, but when I started to listen to Wagner and to learn Wagner, I fell in love with it. There is a depth and a passion. A lot of the characters, I made a dance piece called Heroes, where I embrace my choreographic self and my singing self in the same body, in the same performance, because Florestan in Fidelio, he's been in a dungeon for years in the darkness, and the first thing he sings is a cry. He goes, "Gott, welch dunkel hier." And so...
Would you have a piece that you might read for that?
The aria from Fidelio, sung by Florestan, the hero in Fidelio, it's very dark. A lot of the Helden tenors, they come in these dark, passionate places. Florestan has been in a dungeon for years, and the people upstairs are plotting to execute him. He's a political prisoner. And the first thing he sings, it's "Gott, welch dunkel hier." Oh God, what darkness here. "O grauenvolle Stille." O somber, gray silence. "Öd ist es mich her, nichts lebet außer mir." O schwere Prüfung, O heavy trial. "Doch gerecht ist Gottes Wille. Ich murre nicht, das Maß der Leiden steht bei dir. In des Lebens Frühlingstagen ist das Glück von mir geflohn. Wahrheit wagt ich kühn zu sagen, und die Ketten sind mein Lohn." Ketten ist chains. And willig duld ich alle Schmerzen, Ende schmählich meiner Bahn. Süße Trost in meinem Herzen. Meine Pflicht hab ich getan. I've done my duty.
That's beautiful. John, sometimes people think that French is a beautiful language, or Italian or something, and German doesn't get such a good deal. But the way you read that there, you can really feel the language. Is that something that appealed to you about the German language?
Yes, I think that there is a great spirituality. I remember going to German plays and going to the Schaubühne in Berlin before I had studied German, and you'll get these snatches of the words, and you would understand some of them. They would hit you. Or when you went to see Shakespeare and you heard the Shakespeare, and you could recognize some of the famous Shakespeare, but translated auf Deutsch. And there's a beauty about it. There's something about the words that's very like a word like Stille. It has the feeling. It has a feeling and a depth. And I think, as an Anglophone, it's easier to get an appreciation of German. When you can learn some of the words, you can actually enter into the poetry or the text.
I have heard people say that they prefer Silent Night sung in German because you get that Stille Nacht and you get that lovely sound.
Yes.
May even be originally German.
I think it is. Yeah. And, all our Christmas traditions, the Christmas tree, all of these things are German-influenced. Yeah. And I found when I went to Germany, what was wonderful was how open and generous people were. When you try to speak German, they would help you. And I remember going to Frankfurt to see some dance and going into one of these, they call them Apfelwein taverns, and they're these huge, like, beer halls, and you're sharing a table with, you just squeeze in beside whoever the strangers are, and they start talking to you. And if you can say Guten Tag, they will give you maybe, if you speak two words, they will give you 200 back. And if you can say, my name is John, ich bin Irish, they will give you paragraphs and paragraphs. Whether you can, and so you're nodding and you kind of get a couple of words. But there was this great desire, even if they knew how dire your German was, there was this great desire they would hang in and try and help you and throw the occasional word at you to steer you along.
And would you be a fan of German food, which also doesn't often get a great reputation?
Yes, German food is different to French food. France, Italy, you know, how can you argue with pasta and pizza or with, you know, wonderful French cuisine? But I love the food in Germany. It's great, hearty food. When I go there, I love to go to one of those restaurants, one of those old beer kellers, and have maybe a schnitzel or, you know, some of the sausages or these kind of things. It's good, hearty food, and with the beer and some great German wine.
Of course, German wine is a bit forgotten too, isn't it? And in parts of Germany, they take their wine very seriously indeed.
Yes, well, I went to Freiburg in Breisgau in the Schwarzwald in the Black Forest to study German for 2 months. And it was an intensive course Monday to Friday with brilliant teaching methods. Like, they had you talking with your neighbors. And the great advantage of this course was you maybe had some Anglophones in the class, but if you study German in Ireland, everybody else is going to speak English. So if you need to borrow a pencil, you'll turn to your neighbor and say, can I borrow a pencil? But you're sitting beside somebody Polish or Japanese, and the only common language we shared was German, basic beginner's German, but we had to struggle to find a way to communicate in German from day one.
In Freiburg, in that part of Germany, over in the French-Swiss corner, was it Badisch or was it Schwäbisch?
Schwäbisch as well. I remember I was very proud. I was making great progress in German, and I went to a restaurant one day, and the waiter said, I'll translate for you. And I said, aber ich spreche Deutsch. And he answered back, aber das ist nicht Deutsch, es ist Schwäbisch, which is another completely different dialect.
And that's quite a compliment to be able to, for someone to think that you've actually got the sound right, that you sound a little bit Schwäbisch.
Yeah. I think my accent, I think they mostly know I'm not German. People are always surprised and delighted when you can speak some German and when you make any effort. And right now, with the travel restrictions and these things, it's harder to travel. So it's harder to keep my German up. But I found that it learning German in that level and being able to spend 2 months of hours every day of German lessons, and then you walk out the door and you go to the supermarket and you are shopping in German, you are getting the tram or the bus in German, you are doing everything in German.
Did you travel across to Switzerland when you were down there and hear their version of German?
No, I never went to Switzerland, but I moved around Germany. I used to go at weekends all the way from Freiburg to Hamburg. There was a theater and dance festival, and I would go Friday night and stay Saturday, Sunday, and then late Sunday take a night train back to Freiburg for my classes. And I could, during the festival, maybe see 2 to 3 shows a day, go to the museums. So that was quite exciting.
From Freiburg to Hamburg.
Oh yeah, I would either sit up all night with my back and neck killing me in an upright seat, or I'd splurge and get a couchette, and you were sharing in these little bunk beds in the train.
But the trains are very exciting, aren't they? They're very romantic or something, quite different from Irish trains.
Yes, yeah, you go into the train station and you see a sign, train to Rome, train to Paris, train to Vienna, and it involves overnights, and you wake up in another country. And there's all these interesting people, and I mean, it takes a lot longer than jumping on a cheap flight and, you know, going in an hour and 20 minutes to somewhere else. But there was a joy in the travel, and you really feel you earned things. And I remember when I went to Germany for the first time, to Cologne, I interrailed and I took a boat train from Dublin to Holyhead to London to Dover to Calais to Paris to Cologne. And you saw the rooftops changing from French rooftops, these sort of orange roofs, to the darker roofs of Germany. And different people got on, and there were like French people, and they were drinking Evian water and eating baguettes. And then the following morning, there were Germans getting on, and it was raining, and they were eating sausages, and you knew you were in a different place. You were sitting in the same train. You'd got on in Gare du Nord, and then you get out in the Hauptbahnhof in Köln from the same train, but with different people around you, and you're in another country.
Do you have a favorite part of Germany or a favorite city?
I have many favorite cities in Germany. There are different things in them all. I really adore Berlin. I adore the size of it, the amount of culture on offer, the museums, the theaters, the mentality of the people, the multicultural feeling. It's become like this metropolis, true metropolis, particularly since the reunification. I love Hamburg. I love the feeling of being near the sea, the smell of the sea when you're in Hamburg. Also, there's wonderful cultural spaces there. I love the Schwarzwald, the Black Forest. My time in Freiburg and Breisgau there was very inspiring. It's so beautiful. It had the same climate as Italy at that time. It was in the summer, and the temperature was in the 30s every day.
Maybe I should have asked the question the other way around. It sounds like you've been to most parts of Germany. Are there parts that you haven't been to yet that you feel you would like to get to?
I've never been to the northeast coast. I've never been to the sea
Rostock.
Or up there. I've been to Hamburg and to Bremen, but I haven't been in the former east up north. Fascinated to go there. I've been in Dresden, I've been in Leipzig, Weimar. They're all wonderful, and they're very different. They're all culturally very different, very rich. I find it all inspiring, and there's something about Germany that you just get down to business. you do what you're going to do, and the weather may not be beautiful, you can be yourself, though you're in Germany, but people have a wonderful work ethic and they support you when you're working. Everybody works with you and everyone tries to do the work and make it as simple as possible.
And what about German culture, maybe, that people might be more familiar with? Do you think that, are you a fan of German TV or films or books? Does much of that come across to Ireland?
I think the best example of German culture that's readily available now is to watch the Netflix TV series Dark. I think there's three series now, and it's set in a small German town called Winden, and it has this concept of time travel, and you get to experience Germany of the late 19th century, of the current day, of the 70s, and you get wonderful portrayals, wonderful characters of a small town.
Is it kind of intrinsically German, this series?
Oh, Dark is very, very German to its soul. I feel I'm in Germany when I'm watching it. And if you watch it listening to the German with the English subtitles, you'll get the best feeling, the way they express themselves. And there's everybody from the nasty village gossip to the tragic heroine, good people, bad people, human people. There's love, there's passion, there's tragedy. It's and it's almost Wagnerian. It has this kind of leading hero, this character who goes on this journey through time. And it's quite beautiful. So I would recommend, if anyone wants to easily connect with German culture, to watch Dark. But when I was in college, I would go to see the films of Fassbinder. I remember also the film of the Tin Drum years ago was great, and Werner Herzog's films.
Have you seen that, My American Friend?
No, I haven't seen that.
I think that's Herzog or Fassbinder. Yeah, one of those challenging, German films that they seem to make. I might come back a little bit just from, because when we're talking about visiting Germany, that these days, of course, we can't really visit. But these days presents lots of challenges with the restrictions around COVID-19. Mm-hmm. I did watch your performance, but
my company,
the company's performance online a few weeks back on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Was that difficult to put together? Was it difficult to imagine how this is for a viewer watching it on a screen rather than, as you said, sometimes kind of having a visceral sense of dance?
Well, working in the arts and working in dance, you are always ready for the unexpected. So making a work during the COVID-19 pandemic, we had in the studio to come in at a certain time. We worked in Dance House, run by Dance Ireland. One of the things I love making as a choreographer are duets and trios, where the dancers have a lot of physical contact. They lift each other, they fall on top of each other, they're touching each other. And as a choreographer with a sense of responsibility in this pandemic, I could not, under any circumstances, ask the dancers to touch or to do any of the things that are usual for us. Two of my dancers share a house and they would be in a pod, and I could have maybe asked them to dance the old-fashioned way, but I've developed a phobia looking at work. When I'm looking at a film on TV, if I start to ask myself, they're not wearing masks, they're not social distancing. Even if you're watching an old film and you see people together in a pub or a restaurant or dancing together in a dance scene, and you think, no, what? No masks? So I thought, I am not going to do this right now. What the time speaks to us was about social distancing and wearing masks. It was comfortable for me to look at this, and it was comfortable for other people. If people got too close, you felt danger. And our COVID compliance officer would be watching just to check that everything was safe. And we booked the theater, the complex. It's this beautiful space in Smithfield. we were going to give live performances for an audience of 50, and then suddenly we can't give a performance for any audience, but we have the theatre booked. The piece is beautiful in the theatre. We have the lighting, we have the costumes, we have everything. So we decided the best thing to do was to perform it for camera, and the dance filmmaker Luca Truffarelli filmed, but he filmed in a way that it was evident he was filming a live performance. So rather than watching a dance film, it's a live performance in a space that was streamed. And it was very difficult performing without an audience for the dancers. We had one or two consultants with the company came, masked, temperature checked, questionnaired, and so that gave at least the dancers somebody other than me to project on, and they knew the camera was there, and there was an intensity in the performance because I think of all the limitations that we have around our lives now, and there was a joy. The dancers found a joy and an ecstasy in being able to dance, to use their bodies, to talk. They were wearing masks, and I found wearing the mask, it blocked out maybe looking at their face, but in another way, you were looking at their backs more, at their necks, at the whole body. And the mask almost had the same effect as watching, I don't know, Chinese opera or Japanese no theater, where they are masked. And you saw another, something deeper from the dancers. Mm. So when this eventually all ends, people will want to look at dance on video anymore or look at people wearing masks is another thing. But right now, I feel we made a response to the times we're in.
The response to the times we're in is important, and it is dealing with what is in front of us and making the most of that challenge rather than not doing things. I suppose maybe it brings us toward kind of a wrap up, but when we talk about what we can't do, and you were saying again you can't get to Germany, have you got plans of when you would be able to go to Germany again? What do you miss about that, and what would be first on your list?
We were scheduled to perform in Düsseldorf at the Internationale Tanzmesse in August, and that was then cancelled as a live event. They streamed our work online. They used a video we had, but we missed very much. It's a great international meeting that dance people come from all over the world, and they spend 4 days together in this wonderful dance house in Düsseldorf. And so that was such a blow, because when this all started in March, we thought maybe by August it'll have eased up. Little did we know. And it was going to be an inconvenience, but we'd manage somehow. And then it became clear that was impossible. But we are planning to come to the next Tanzmesse, which is going to be in 2022. I'm making plans. Dancer Jonas and Martin, who worked with the Frankfurt Ballet and the Forsyth Company and Dance Hall Ensemble, Jonas and myself are going to work on a project as soon as we can be in the same country. And we'll have our masks and our sanitizers and everything ready. But we're planning, and as I said, we have to be flexible, so we have to maybe make a provisional plan and then be ready that it will have to be rescheduled. But we are going forward because there's no other way to go. We still have to work, we have to dance, and we have to make the work. Maybe for me, it's the obstacles have actually inspired me and given me a lot of fight.
Mm. Maybe to come back round again to the idea of a kind of crossover between Irish and German culture. There are probably lots of people in Ireland whose most familiar space outside here is Spain, or maybe France or Italy, and are quite familiar with lots of the music or dance or opera or film from those places, but far, far less so with the German culture. Are there things that you would particularly recommend for people who haven't tasted much German culture?
What I would recommend to anyone who isn't familiar with German culture but thinks of Italy, Spain, France, is to maybe, if you like opera, try and go to the Bayreuth Festival and see Wagner in Wagner's home where it was all designed for. Or go to any of the great cities like Berlin, Munich, the Bayerische Staatsoper. It's incredible. And see the operas there, the Berlin Philharmonie. And you can access them online as well. They've got a wonderful app and are making a lot of their concerts available. Or go to any of the big cities and go to the museums, not just for the German paintings. The Sistine Madonna by Raphael is in Dresden. They have so many incredible museums all over Germany. And then there's the most beautiful countryside, the Schwarzwald, the Black Forest, the Jungfrau, Bavaria, the beauty, and also great weather. Lake Constance, it's incredible. It's an incredible, deep, rich country. We're probably all touched by various things. If you've ever hummed the Ode to Joy and bop, 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 you're already consuming German culture. If you think of Brecht, if you're a theater person, and Brecht had such a huge influence, we're still negotiating his legacy and his inspirations, and you're connecting with German culture. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that's overtly German, but there are these concepts, philosophy, classics, all the scholarship, psychology. It's a great, great part of Europe, and it's a great part of world culture that I think we all benefit from engaging in more.
That's fantastic, John, and it was wonderful to chat to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, for today anyway, it's Slán agus beannacht and Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen, yeah.